That was specked. Warshaw's an ass.
Oh, do you blame him? He thought he was going to command the fleet.
He has a point, too.
No, he doesn't.
Yes, he does. Would you want a sailor calling the shots when we take Tyranno?
Okay, he's got a point.
But what was that stuff on Fahey's eyes? It looked like eye makeup, like the stuff women use.
It is.
He's wearing makeup?
He's a bitch.
What is that supposed to mean?
Harris, none of these boys have had R&R for 4 years now.
And?
And the makeup identifies Fahey as a pleasure vehicle.
God. I'm glad he's not a Marine.
You haven't toured the compound yet, have you?
I shook my head. Tomer and Harrington exchanged a glance. At the end of the day, when I went back to my billet, I had lipstick, eyeshadow, rouge, and a pair of man-sized silk stockings. Ava stood at the edge of the bed, staring down at the various tubes and bottles as if they were antiques from a foreign land.
What do you think? Can you use any of it?
Use it for what?
It's makeup.
Honey, back home we called this queer gear.
Queer gear?
These are cosmetics for men.
She picked up the stockings.
Oh, I could use these for a hammock, but I wouldn't want to wear them. Harris, stockings are not one size fits all.
A week passed between the day I boarded the Kamehameha and the time we would start the mission. In my off hours, I stockpiled MREs in my quarters so that Ava would have food to eat while I was on Tyranno. I had Ava sample each of the meals to see which ones she liked. She didn't like any of them, but she did not complain.
Can't we just use room service?
They'd probably just bring you more of the same stuff.
Honey, that's fine with me as long as the waiter looks good.
Charming. He'd probably look a lot like me since they're all clones.
We could have smuggled a spare rack into the billet. We had the floor space. Instead, Ava and I slept in the same bed. I liked the warmth of her body under the sheets, though she showed little interest in me. She generally came to bed dressed in her bra and panties, both of which were made of a satiny white material that had been stained and dulled by the heat and sweat of Clone Town. Ava slept with her back toward me. If I reached out and touched her, she did not pull away so long as my hands stayed around her back or her waist. When I reached too high, she wrapped her arms across her breasts and curled into a ball. She probably would have allowed me to grope her if I forced the issue, but I never did. Instead, I would lie there, smelling her scent and feeling her warmth, entirely unable to sleep. We talked a lot. Ava told me all about her life. She treated conversations like an autobiography. I didn't mind, though. Her life was interesting. Ava had known that she was a clone from an early age. When she was young, the man who claimed to be her father employed a series of lab technicians to help raise her. Although they treated her well, they were not especially careful about what they said around her or about keeping her safely away from the truth of her birth. As an 8-year-old, she sneaked into the lab where she was cloned and saw the equipment that reproduced her. She wanted to believe she was real, but seeing that equipment, she had doubts. She lost her virginity and decided she was a clone all on the same night. She had her first period at the age of 15. Exactly 1 week later, her father came to visit her after she'd gone to bed. By the time he left, her virginity was gone, along with any illusions that the man was really her father. She related this tale in a matter-of-fact style without shedding a single useless tear. After telling me this story, she stared at me for several seconds.
What's wrong with you?
Wrong with me?
Don't you feel sorry for me?
Why the speck would I feel sorry for you?
He raped me and took away my dreams.
Oh. Sorry.
That night and the next, Ava and I slept in the same rack, but a million miles apart. I call them nights, but they were just sleep periods. Life on a starship, the halls are constantly bright as day, and the world around you is generally dark as night. I had work shifts, shifts in which I was off duty, and shifts in which I slept. Ava's attitude thawed the day before I left for Tyranno. From the moment I entered my quarters, she wanted to talk. I came in sweating from a day spent working out, sparring, and drilling my men. Ava followed me and asked about my day as I stripped off my clothes.
Good, I guess. My men and I worked hard. They look ready.
That's good. Are you excited to get to the planet?
I turned to look at her. Dressed in the smallest sailor suit I could find, she looked clean and childlike. The tunic looked stylish and loose on her, but the trousers were baggy around her waist. She had also applied the makeup I brought her. Her eyes looked wide, and the blue of the eyeshadow played well against the green of her eyes. The makeup looked a lot better on her than it had on Fei.
Are you excited or scared?
I'm both.
Excited to fight?
I was designed to fight.
I went into the bathroom and stepped into the shower. Ava stepped into the bathroom so that we could hear each other over the water.
Do you think it's going to be dangerous?
Anytime the Avatari are involved, things are going to get dangerous.
Is Tomer ready?
Ava knew all about Tomer and his drug problems.
He's as ready as he's going to get.
Can you count on him?
I think so. He still moves slowly, but once he gets a little adrenaline running through him, I think he'll do okay.
What about Warshaw? Are you worried about him?
There's not much I can do there.
What if he doesn't let you off the planet? Would he try to shoot your transport?
He could. I don't think he will. If he shoots my transport, he's going to answer to some angry Marines.
Does he know that?
He'd better.
After my shower, I dressed and went to the mess. We had hundreds of MREs stowed by now, but we would save those meals. I brought back a tray covered with food, 2 steaks, 2 bowls of soup, 2 potatoes, and an oversized salad. Ava mostly ate salad and picked at a potato. I ended up eating both steaks, which was just fine. After dinner, I dropped off my dishes and went to the officers' club to grab some bottles of beer. Ava preferred wine to beer, but she would need to make do.
Ava, I'm back.
She came out from the bathroom, very much the confident woman of the house.
Why do I feel like I should be bringing you a pipe and slippers?
She came and sat across the bed from me. She poured her beer into a glass. I drank mine from the bottle.
I know you're excited about going on a mission, but don't you ever get scared? Do Marines get scared?
Sure we do. The Avatari scare the hell out of me. A little fear is a good thing. It keeps you from making stupid mistakes. Scared is another thing. I've seen good men freeze under fire.
But that's never been a problem for you, Harris.
The Avatari are 8 feet tall. You can't hurt them. Their guns cut through shielded bunkers as easily as they shoot through the air. I saw a man get hit by a bolt in the shoulder. He went into convulsions and died a miserable death. Yes, I get scared.
Well, I'd be worried if they didn't scare you.
Once we liberate Terrano, you'll be able to move into a mansion. Or maybe even a whole damn hotel to yourself. I bet you'll be glad to have a place to yourself.
I suppose so.
You don't want your own hotel?
Not to myself. I thought maybe we could share a place. Are you laughing at me?
No. I thought you'd be glad to be rid of me.
Why would I want to get rid of you?
Well, you haven't let me touch you since we landed on the ship.
And you've been wonderful about it. Ted and Al never took no for an answer.
Al? Al Smith? You don't mean General Alexander Smith.
Looking like a scolded child, she silently nodded, her beautiful green eyes fixed on mine.
You slept with Al Smith? That fat old bastard has to be twice your age.
He's almost 3 times my age, thank you. I'm 23 and he's 65.
What in the world were you doing with that old man?
Faking it, mostly. He needed a lot of encouragement.
I don't understand.
The Senate hearings set off a witch hunt, and I was the galaxy's most famous witch. Ted dumped me before the hearings even ended. We were living together, and he kicked me out of the house.
Was he good to you before the hearings?
Was he good to me? Honey, I hope he knows more strategies in battle than he does in bed.
No shit?
Even good things get boring when you do them the exact same way every time. I will say this for the boy. He's got lots of energy. A lot of energy. He liked it more than I did, Harris.
So how'd you end up with General Smith?
I moved in with Al after Teddy kicked me out. He said he would keep me safe until things calmed down. That lasted for about a month. Then he dropped me off at Clone Town. So, what do you think, Harris? Does that make me a whore?
It says a lot about Smith's negotiation skills. What about me? Am I energetic?
You took care of me. And you never forced yourself on me.
I think I'd rather have you think of me as energetic.
Teddy showed me off like a trophy, like one of the medals he wears on his chest. That's why he introduced me to you at the New Year's Eve party. He wanted to show you he had something you couldn't have.
He's got a lot of things I will never have.
He doesn't see it that way. He's scared of you, Harris.
Scared of me?
Scared to death. They were all scared of you. Al, Teddy, J.P. Glade, all of them. They knew you won the war. They were scared Congress would find out who was a hero and who was a fake.
Even Moreland?
Oh, especially Teddy.
But he fought. He was the only officer who stood his ground.
He said he didn't fight in the last battle, the one that ended the war.
No, he didn't.
But you did.
Harrington, Tomer, Freeman, and me.
You were the real heroes.
Ava slid closer to me. She fixed her eyes on mine, a strange smile playing on her lips, and she ran her finger along the open neckline of her blouse. She moved slowly, and her eyes never left mine. There was nothing unusual about the way she undid the first buttons. Her eyes stayed on mine, her smile remained gentle. There were 7 buttons on her sailor's tunic. As she undid the buttons, she peeled back the material, giving me a glimpse of breasts and bra. Just that glimpse of satiny material got my pulse pounding. She leaned toward me until our lips met. I realized now that she was in control. Ava, with her perfect body, green eyes, and gentle touch, knew what she wanted and how to get things done. I did not think she loved me, but she gave herself over to me that night in a way that seemed more lasting than before. When my alarm woke me the next morning, I found her lying beside me wide awake. She took my hand in hers and held it against her breast.
Are you gonna be okay?
Me? I'm not the one going out to fight the aliens.
You're going to need to hide for a while.
You just come back to me.
We'll find other women on the planet. You'll be safe once you're not the only woman on this side of the galaxy.
I have to admit, I would be so glad to talk to another woman. God, Harris, you have no idea.
For now, you have to stay hidden. I'll be back as soon as I can.
No problem. I'll just hang the Do Not Disturb sign outside your door.
Inside the docking bay door, 250 Marines in combat armor waited beside transports, lined up and ready to go. These were the men with whom I had trained for the last week. Some had come with me from Clone Town. The rest were veterans of the Scutum Crux fleet. We had 5 transports, enough room for 500 men. But each transport also carried 2 armored jeeps. We were a small force traveling light. Even if the aliens had withdrawn from Terrano, there was no way we could take control of the planet with 250 men and 10 jeeps.
Captain Harris, the men are ready to board, sir.
Load them up, Sergeant Tomer. Then meet me in the cockpit of the first bird once we are underway.
Aye, aye, sir.
I went to the cockpit of the transport I would be flying in. The pilot behind the yoke was a clone. Brown hair, brown eyes, the works.
Are we ready for takeoff, sir?
Just loading the men.
On some level, I still did not believe clones could run their own fleet. It hardly seemed possible. We were the grunts, the cannon fodder, the drones. Naturalborns threw us into the line of fire, and we held to the last man, never questioning orders. Seeing a clone in the pilot's seat and the confident way he checked the controls made other possibilities seem more real. After about 10 minutes, we were loaded up, and the transport took off, followed by the other 4. In the far distance, Terrano shone like a light. With the ion curtain around it, the planet had a man-made appearance. Instead of the blues, greens, and whites of a habitable planet, Terrano looked as if it had been spun in white gold. It did not look habitable.
I have a fix on the target zone.
Do you think that was what New Copenhagen looked like from outside, sir?
I never thought about it.
Captain, what do we do if the aliens are still down there?
They're gone. They don't have time for sightseeing, not with an entire galaxy to destroy.
As long as the ion curtain remained in place, the Avatari could return. The curtain might even work like a burglar alarm, sending a signal to the Avatari every time we poked a hole into the atmosphere.
Do you have the torpedo ready?
Ready to go, sir.
Do you think this will work?
Doesn't matter what I think. We'll know one way or the other in about 5 seconds. You may fire at will.
The weapon fired. Staring out the front of the ship, I caught the quickest glimpse of the torpedo as it sped off from under the ship, just a flash of dull white and orange against the luminous backdrop of Terrano. Then the torpedo vanished into the glare of the planet. We hovered nearly 1,000 miles above the spot where the torpedo exploded. From this distance, the flash was bright, but not blinding, just a small speck of white light that flared and vanished, leaving a hole in the shining sphere of the ion curtain. The hole was small and dark, with shimmering edges where the radioactive particles from the torpedo, faded into the tachyons of the ion curtain. I put on my helmet and opened an interlink frequency that would reach every man on all five transports.
Hold on tight. We're going in.
We shifted direction and picked up speed. Ahead of us, the hole looked like a dark speck on a glaring light bulb. The planet filled the windshield. In the middle of the glowing horizon, the hole that we had created with our puny torpedo looked like a mere pinprick.
I hope the corridor holds. Here we go.
His words barely had time to register before we bored into the atmosphere with the force of a bullet slamming into a wooden plank. The meters and lights around the cockpit flickered, and I realized that the door we had opened with our torpedo was shrinking.
If it closes in on us...
I see that, sir.
Can you leave a beacon on this spot?
We're dead either way.
The pilot was right. Only a lunatic would take a transport balls out on a vertical drop. With its stubby wings, this bird was anything but aerodynamic. If we dropped too quickly, we would never pull out. I glanced down at the instruments and saw the altitude and speed meters flashing nonsense. The radar screen turned dark. Then, just as suddenly as we had entered the ion layer, we plummeted into open air and the systems went normal. The sky above us glowed like a sun, and the world below us was green and blue. In the forest below us, I saw a reminder that we had entered Avatari-held space, a line of glowing spheres.
What are those? Can you leave a beacon on this spot?
Yes, sir.
He sat back, flipped a switch on the communications console, then craned his neck to get one last look back at the spheres.
Captain, what were those things?
It's an intergalactic transportation system.
Like the broadcast network?
Something like that.
I radioed Tomer in the kettle.
How's the breakage back there?
Minimal, sir.
Next, I radioed Harrington. He flew in the second transport.
Your men okay?
I've had smoother rides.
And your men?
One dumb shit asked if we could do it again.
I contacted Sergeant Philo Hollingsworth in the third transport.
A few bruises, but they'll get over it.
I got no response from the fourth and fifth transports. The pilot checked the radar and confirmed that both ships were gone. We entered the airspace over Norristown. The wreckage that had once been a capital city reminded me of ancient ruins. The skeletons of a few tall buildings poked out of the debris below us like plants growing out of a rocky field. A three-story tall water tower pointed up at us like an accusing finger. Norristown, once a showcase city, had become an entropic mess with heaps of rubble, broken streets, and the occasional straight edge of a wall or walkway.
I've located the airfield up ahead. It looks clean. Do you want to go in for a landing or do a flyby?
Go on in.
The pilot signaled the other transports to land, and we touched down. Taking a quick look through the windshield, I saw no wreckage, no choppers, and no bodies. The buildings looked untouched. After we pulled the gear from our three remaining transports, I divided the men up. Tomer and I would take two platoons into town. Hollingsworth would guard the landing field with the third platoon. Harrington had the important job. He and a pilot would take a transport and locate the Avatari mining site. Our jeeps could transport eight men, but you wouldn't want to pack more than five men into them during combat situations. Having lost two transports, we were down to six jeeps, meaning we could drive 48 men into town. We traveled slowly into downtown Norristown. The first few miles took us along the overgrown streets of an industrial district. Weeds choked the ditches, and tall grass grew up along the fences. Except for cracked windows and an occasional collapsed facade, the one- and two-story buildings in this part of town had survived the war untouched. Dusty cars sat in parking lots and along the street. Most had flat tires. We saw no bodies. None at all.
It looks like they just walked away. I wonder how far they got.
2 hours after leaving the airfield, we passed a billboard for a shopping mall. All of the buildings in this part of town had been demolished. We passed the remains of a fence here and the jagged remains of a warehouse there, but nothing over 10 feet tall remained standing in this part of town. In the distance, three tall skyscrapers towered over the road, but that was a few miles ahead. We drove over patches of road when they appeared between mounds of debris and rubble. We passed a park in which a row of barren flagpoles stood out of the ground like giant needles. The Army airfield was on the east side of town. We drove west toward the heart of the city. The destruction was so complete in some parts of Norristown that the landscape looked like a painted desert. We passed an area in which a 10-foot knoll, the color of red brick, lined the road to our left, and a 30-foot hill of gray concrete and rusted steel lined the road to our right. The dusty shards of black glass along the top of the hill reflected the light from the sky.
This can't be Norristown, sir.
This is it, Corporal. That hill over there probably stood 30 stories tall when the aliens arrived.
The driver slowed the Jeep and studied the panorama around us. Perhaps he was trying to reconstruct the city in his mind, or he might have been watching out for an ambush. A large river ran through the center of Norristown. As we approached it, we saw the arches and towers of a large suspension bridge spanning the water. I recognized the architecture from the flight in. It was the bridge that had collapsed on one side.
We're not going to be able to cross here.
No, sir.
The closer half of the bridge looked solid enough. One of the arches from the far side of the bridge poked out of the water like the elbow of a swimming giant. The rest of the bridge had vanished beneath the river. We passed a row of small apartment buildings overlooking the river. Following the mostly clear road that ran along the waterfront, we searched for another bridge. A couple of miles up the road, we found an old concrete arch bridge that seemed untouched by the war. It wasn't until we crossed the bridge that we started seeing bodies. After 4 years out in the open, they were no longer rotting corpses, just bones. Had I removed my helmet, I would not have smelled the scents of death and decay. They were long gone. From what I could tell, the people on this planet had died in groups. We might drive for blocks and see nothing more than an occasional army helmet or fatigue-clad skeleton. Then we would turn a corner and enter a boneyard in which the ground seemed paved with skulls and femurs. I understood this, of course. The concentrated areas were places where battalions made a stand. The scattered remains were soldiers who died in retreat. The Marines who fought on Terrano did not fight alongside the soldiers in these battles. We passed avenues that looked as if they had been paved with skeletons draped in dirty camos, places in which the army made a stand. A few blocks later, Marine battle armor lay strewn along the street.
Harris, why do I feel like I'm back in Valhalla?
Valhalla was the capital of New Copenhagen. I did not respond, but I was thinking the same thing. As we drove through one particularly corpse-sown battlefield, I saw a battery of rocket launchers leaning against the top of the wall of a two-story building like a drunk leaning to keep from falling to the ground. There were so many bones scattered along this stretch of road that it would have taken an army of archaeologists and psychics to reconstruct the skeletons. As we pushed deeper into the downtown area, the rubble of buildings that had once lined the roadway now covered it. Crossing a dune made of walnut-sized pieces of debris, our jeeps left cattails of dust in their wake.
Captain Harris, we're picking up traces of shit gas in the air.
Harrington was out of interlink range, but the communications gear in his transport had a long-distance communicator that could reach my command link.
Have you found the opening?
Not yet, but we've got to be close. You don't get this much shit in the air unless there's an asshole nearby.
Keep me advised.
We drove into the downtown financial district, an area mostly reduced to dust. Less than a mile ahead of us, the three remaining high-rise towers rose out of the ground like giant pillars. Two of the buildings had black glass exteriors. The third had a silver metallic finish. These might have been the tallest buildings on Terrano. Had they fallen, their rubble would have flooded three blocks in every direction. The black marble walls of the first building were pocked with holes and scrapes from large caliber bullets. Some of the street level windows were shattered, and others were cracked. If people had died here, the bodies had been cleared out. The driveway into the parking lot looked like it had been swept clean. I had my driver park our Jeep, and the other Jeeps stopped behind us. A few of the men hopped out of their rides, while others stood on the vehicles. I got out as well. Everyone scanned the area.
Listen up. We're going to split up. Tomer, you take three jeeps and head out to Fort Sebastian. I want to know about weapons, power, and survivors.
Fort Sebastian was the local army base. The force defending Terrano used it as their hub.
Aye, aye, sir.
Tomer gave the command, and the last three jeeps in our convoy split off from the rest. I watched them leave, then I addressed the men who remained with me.
We came here looking for survivors. I don't give a shit about dead bodies, so don't waste my specking airspace gabbing about them. Got that? We'll search the whole damn city if we need to, but we're gonna start here with these buildings. Now fall out.
These men knew the drill. They broke into platoons and fire teams.
Listen up, Leathernecks. We are not here to act like the specking police. We did not come here to specking serve and protect. If you see survivors, do not expect them to be rational human beings. If you see survivors, assume that they are armed. You may have noticed that there are a lot more dead bodies than weapons on the streets. If the bodies are there and the weapons are gone,
you can bet your ass that whoever took those weapons is alive and scared and dangerous as hell.
Sir?
What is it?
Begging the captain's pardon, sir, but this Marine saw lots of human bodies.
We're racing against the clock. Spit it out, man.
Sir, this Marine did not see dead aliens, sir.
Yeah, they evaporate when they die.
Can we kill them, sir?
Damn straight we can kill them. You have your orders. Call me if you find survivors.
I entered the building, stepping over a shattered glass panel.
Harrington, you found anything yet?
I walked down the hall that led to two rows of five elevators. All of the doors to the elevators stood open. They looked like closets.
I think we found it. Do you want me to come down for a closer look?
Not a chance, Sergeant. Leave a beacon over the entrance and get back here as quickly as possible.
Yes, sir.
I turned my attention to finding survivors. Besides me, seven other Marines entered this building. We would search the building in two fire teams. Fire teams consisted of a rifleman, an automatic rifleman, a team leader, and a grenadier. I played leader in absentia for one of those teams, sending my men to explore the lobby.
Captain Harris?
My rifleman was on point.
What is it? I see a large mess at the back of the lobby. Should we search it?
This whole place is a mess.
A mess hall, sir. A cafeteria.
See any survivors?
No, but it looks like somebody is still using the facilities. I'm knee-deep in empty cans and boxes.
Get this. Somebody's using the oven for a fireplace.
But you haven't spotted anybody with a pulse?
No, sir.
Stay alert.
Past the open doors of the elevators, I found a stairwell. Someone had removed the door from its hinges and left it leaning against the wall. I searched the stairwell using my heat vision lenses to make sure no one was waiting for me around the corner. The area was clear. Inside the stairwell, flights of stairs formed a helix leading to the top of the building. I did not think I would need to climb to the top. The building was over 100 stories tall. Without the elevators and air conditioning, any survivors living in this tower would confine themselves to the lower floors. I climbed a couple of flights, scanned the area for heat signatures, and kept my M27 ready. When I reached the second floor landing, I found an open doorway leading to a mezzanine. Looted shops with smashed windows lined the halls past the doorway. A flood of trash, papers, and broken furniture covered the black marble floor. I continued up the stairs and climbed three more flights to the next floor. The door to this floor was closed.
Has anyone found anything?
Everyone but Tomer replied with a negative.
We found Fort Sebastian.
I switched frequencies to a direct line with Tomer.
How does it look?
We're outside the fort right now, sir. It's pretty banged up.
How banged up?
Remember the shielded bunker the Army used on New Copenhagen? They set one up just like it over here.
How did it hold up?
It looks like the Avatari used it for target practice.
Any sign of life?
It's full of bones. I found a rat's nest.
How about MREs, clean blankets, screaming children, or shit that hasn't dried to powder?
Nothing.
Find any guns or grenades?
Someone cleaned the place out.
It would seem so.
Want me to search the rest of the bunker?
Don't waste your time. You might as well move on to the fort. Keep an eye out for working generators. They needed juice to talk to the fleet. If you find the generators, you'll probably find the survivors.
Aye, sir.
Trusting Tomer to follow orders, I returned to my own search. I opened the door to the next floor slowly. I used the external speaker on my helmet.
This is Captain Wason Harris of the Unified Authority Marines. I repeat, I am a Unified Authority Marine. Is there anyone in this building?
I stepped out of the stairwell and into that hall. Using night for day vision, I saw someone to my right trying to slink away. It was only a kid, had to be in his teens. He crawled along the wall until he reached a door. Then he looked back toward me and turned the knob. Light leaked into the hall as he opened the door. The boy slithered through the opening and closed the door behind him.
I found a survivor.
Where are you, sir? Was he friendly?
He wasn't armed.
That's good news.
Where are you, sir?
Third floor.
We're on our way, sir.
I was not foolish enough to follow that kid into a blind situation without backup. As I waited, I tried identifying myself again.
This is Captain Wason Harris of the Unified Authority Marines.
Scanning the wall using the heat vision lens in my visor, I located several people hidden beyond the wall. Judging by the way they crouched along the floor, they seemed to be frightened of me. My fire team joined me.
Where are the survivors, sir?
Hiding behind the door.
I pulled out a grenade and set it for the lowest yield possible.
Stand away from the wall.
Sir, I found the mines.
Not now, Harrington.
I tossed my grenade toward the wall and took cover.
Aye, sir. But you want me to reconnoiter the spheres on my way back?
Harrington, I'm a bit busy at the moment.
Yes, sir.
There was a second explosion caused by whatever explosives the friendly natives had rigged, and it sent a rush of flames across the hall.
What the hell was that?
That, Corporal, is why you stay undercover when there is fire in the hole.
I don't think they were happy to see you, sir.
That's just because they don't know him.
We searched the first five floors of the building. The place had been occupied recently, but now stood abandoned. Reviewing the confrontation, I decided that throwing a grenade might not have made a good first impression, and time was running out.
Captain Harris, we've located survivors. Do you want us to make contact?
The call came from the fire team I had sent into the metal-skinned skyscraper. The Marine on the line was Corporal Hunter Ritz.
Negative, Corporal. The natives are not friendly.
Well, the natives in this building may be hostile, but they don't look dangerous, sir. It's like a cat house in here.
A cat house?
Yes, sir. A brothel, sir.
As in hookers and whores?
Maybe not hookers and whores, but they are all of the female variety, sir. It's pretty much paradise as far as I can tell. We've checked several floors. There are no men.
Keep your armor on.
We're gonna need to make contact sooner or later, sir. And they don't appear to be hostile. Maybe we could just ask them for directions.
Keep away from them, Ritz. That is an order. Do not start up a conversation. Do not deliver your best pickup line. You and your men will observe the targets, but do not engage.
Yes, sir.
And try to stay alert, asshole. There's no point keeping the hens in a hen house unless you have a watchdog to guard it.
Yes, sir. Sir, we have a problem. The locals have arrived.
Using the command link, I looked at the situation through the other man's visor. He must have been standing at a window staring down at the street. Below him, the residents of Norristown had arrived en masse. There were hundreds of men in the street, standing silently, prepared to fight but not yet rioting. In the center of this mob, my three jeeps looked like tiny islands. No one had overturned our vehicles, but the tide closed around them. I sent my next message out on a company-wide frequency that even Hollingsworth and Harrington would hear.
Boys, we have a street full of survivors.
How'd you find them?
They found us.
Do you want me to bring my men?
Stay put, Tomer. They're behaving themselves so far.
I went to the stairwell and trotted back up the stairs to the mezzanine, where I could have a closer look at the street below. I stole up to the window, my nerves tense. A large mob of men had formed on the street, but they showed no interest in entering the building. They milled around like an army of vagrants. Many carried M27s, or handguns. A few of them had rocket launchers. Every weapon I saw was standard military issue, probably gleaned from the streets. As I surveyed the scene, I noticed Corporal Ritz peering around the shattered glass of a fifth-floor window. My visor read his virtual tags. He looked in my direction, probably spotting me through the window with his telescopic lens.
Do you think they know we're up here?
Can you think of any other reason for them to be here?
God, look at those bastards. There must be a thousand of them. Are they armed?
Every last mother-specking one of them. I think we know where all the guns disappeared to. Ritz, what's happening in the brothel?
Not much, sir. I don't think the ladies know we're in here.
So we have a standoff. They don't want to come in, and we don't want to step out.
Maybe they don't know who we are, sir. Maybe they don't know we're Marines.
Maybe they don't care.
I decided it was time to introduce myself. Pulling both a grenade and a rocket launcher from my belt, I took 12 paces back from the window. I set the grenade for a relatively low-yield explosion and tossed it toward the window, then hid in the doorway.
What are you doing?
I'm introducing myself.
The men in the street scattered as glass showered down on them. Not giving them a moment to regroup, I bolted for the window and fired my rocket at one of the jeeps. Down below, all of the men on the street turned their guns in my direction, but nobody fired. Finally, a man stepped out of the crowd and climbed onto the nearest jeep. He wore army fatigues and a Marine Corps combat helmet. He spoke to me over an open channel on the interlink.
I understand your need to intrude upon our privacy, Captain, but why in God's name are you shooting at us?
Hoping that the mob would overestimate our numbers, I had my Marines trail me as I left the building. The locals made way for me as I entered the street, allowing me and my Marines to pass through unchallenged. I worked my way toward the flaming wreckage of the jeep and the man in the combat helmet who stood beside it. As I came closer, he removed his helmet, revealing shoulder-length hair and a flowing beard. I hardly recognized him. I came within a few feet of the man and removed my helmet as well.
What are you doing here, Captain Harris?
Right Reverend Colonel Ellery Doctorow was the man who had told the fleet to go away. He sounded like he was about to do it again. Gone was the slightest trace that this man had ever been an army chaplain.
We came to liberate Terrano.
You hear that? He came to rescue us! The aliens left here long ago, Captain.
Doctorow was not as tall as he looked in his picture. He stood over 6 feet tall, but I still had an inch or two on him. He had aged over the last 4 years and had become less military in his bearing. The photo that came with my orders showed Doctorow still in his 50s. Now he looked more like a well-preserved 65-year-old. He stood erect, but he was too thin. He had let his coal-colored flat top grow into a shaggy mane that reached down to his shoulders, and his thick salt-and-pepper beard had strayed over to the salt side of the equation.
Reverend Doctorow.
I prefer Colonel.
Colonel, you see that bright stuff up there in the sky?
Hard to miss.
They call that the ion curtain.
I'm familiar with the term. The scientist who coined it was stationed at Fort Sebastian.
Was he a dwarf?
It sounds as if we have a common acquaintance.
Dr. William Sweetwater.
They tried to lift him off the planet as the invasion began. Sounds like he made it.
I met him on New Copenhagen.
New Copenhagen? The aliens made it all the way to New Copenhagen?
Yes, sir. They would have finished us off on New Copenhagen if it were not for Sweetwater. A little bastard saved us.
Saved you from what? The aliens don't do much once they capture your planet. They leave their ion curtain in the sky, they knock down buildings, but they're not all that bad. They killed off our army, but they left us alone once we stopped trying to fight them.
They haven't left.
We haven't seen them for years.
You do know that there's a line of glowing spheres no more than 20 miles from here? The aliens use those to spawn. You know that, right?
That, Captain Harris, is why we asked your fleet to go away.
I did not go into detail, but I told Doctorow about New Copenhagen. I described how the Avatari had hollowed mountains and filled them with gas so toxic the fumes slowly melted your skin. I told him how the aliens would expand the nearest sun and use it to bake Terrano until it was cinder and gas.
Is that a fact? That changes things. How long do we have?
It will be a few thousand years before the sun goes on broil, but we've already located the gas. It's nasty shit.
There's no need for vulgarity. I don't suppose you have any proof.
Excuse me.
I arranged to have Doctorow take a transport with Tomer so that he could see the mines for himself. Tomer arrived at the airfield first. He loaded 75 Marines onto the transport, then waited for Doctorow to show. Once the Right Reverend rolled onto the field, Tomer led him onto the transport and they took off for the mines. They did not leave empty-handed. I hoped Doctorow would not notice the large crate in the cargo hold or ask why 75 Marines had come along for the ride. So far, nothing on this mission had gone according to plan.
Captain Harris, sir. What do you have, Hollingsworth? I'm still not getting through to Sergeant Harrington. Maybe something is wrong with his equipment.
I understand, sir, but I haven't had any luck locating his transport with our radar.
Oh, shit. Spec.
What is it, sir?
Harrington said he was going to fly by the Avatari spheres. He said he was going to swing by the spheres on the way back to the airfield. Sergeant, you better have your pilot patch me through to Tomer's transport. We have a hell of a problem.
I looked around the street. Mixing what was left of my men with the local militia, there might have been 1,000 of us. We mostly had M27s and machine guns. My men would have some rocket launchers and grenades. We were cooked.
Captain Harris, I have them.
Tomer.
Yes, sir.
Doctorow, you there too?
I'm here.
Harrington is dead. The Avatari are on their way.
The beacon Harrington left by the mines was just over 8,000 miles away. Flying at 2,250 miles per hour, it would have taken him nearly 4 hours to get from the mines to the spheres. That meant he went down about an hour ago. The spheres were approximately 20 miles from town. An army with light armor could close that gap in under an hour, but the Avatari moved slowly. Once they emerged from the spheres, it would take them hours to make the long march into Norristown. Using interlink communications, I went over my calculations with Doctorow and Tomer and Hollingsworth.
Are you sure about this?
For all you know, Harrington's radio might be on the blink.
That wouldn't explain why his ship no longer shows up on radar.
So what do we do?
We're going to have to fight.
Then you're on your own, Captain. This is your fight. They came here looking for you.
It's too late for that. We're going to have to fight them. One way or another, we're going to need to fight them.
You want me to scout the area? I could take a transport and be back in no time.
I wouldn't mind having an ETA on the bastards, Hollingsworth. Just don't get shot down.
Perhaps hearing Hollingsworth throw himself into the fire reminded Doctorow of his days in the Army. Maybe he'd just rethought things. Something made him change his mind.
If the mines are as bad as you say they are, we're all facing a death sentence. If it will help, Captain Harris, my militia will join you.
1,000 men with M-27s? I'm not sure what good that will do.
My militia is 5,000 men strong, and we have a lot more than machine guns. We have an exit strategy we've been saving in case of an emergency.
We have an army of indestructible aliens marching into town. I think that qualifies as an emergency.
It sounds like an emergency to me.
As it turned out, the Right Reverend Colonel Ellery Doctorow had a very good exit strategy indeed. I rode with the locals in a truck to go see the place that Ellery Doctorow described as the darkest spot on Terrano. On the way, we would stop by the Norristown Armory. According to Doctorow, the locals had collected enough guns and bombs to put up a fight.
Captain Harris, I found Harrington's transport.
Any survivors?
I can't tell from here. You want me to go in for a closer look?
No. Do you see any sign of the aliens?
There's some kind of glow coming off some hills. Should I go have a look?
No. That glow is the aliens. Mark the area on the map and get back to the airfield.
A moment later, the positions came in on the virtual map in my visor. Hollingsworth marked the spot where Harrington went down. It was 23 miles west of town. He also marked the aliens' position, approximately 18 miles west of town. One thing about the Avatari, they moved at a glacial pace. I took off my helmet so I could speak with Kareem O'Doul, Doctorow's right-hand man.
The aliens are 18 miles west of us. That gives us 4 or 5 hours.
O'Doul was a small, dark man with nearly black eyes and skin the color of walnut shells. His hair was brown, but very close to black.
What about your missing transport?
They found that too.
Shot down?
Yeah, they got it. How fast can your men rig the tunnels?
I've seen them do miracles. You're talking about blowing up a big area. If they had more time, they'd give you a real work of art.
Sounds like you have some demolitions experience.
Army Special Forces. I'm not your demolitions man. We have a couple of ex-Navy SEALs rigging the bombs.
SEALs? Survivors from the alien invasion?
Retired.
Old guys?
And they aren't getting any younger. Good thing setting up charges is like riding a bike. These boys will be hobbling senile before they forget how to set a charge.
Good thing.
O'Doul drove through the broken city desert and into a ghost town where 2- and 3-story buildings stood untouched and abandoned. The doors of all these structures hung open, and a few had broken windows. But for the most part, the war had passed them by.
Welcome to the new capital city of Terrano.
A network of squat 5-story buildings spread out around the area like a maze. Sky bridges ran between the buildings, connecting them like a strand of spider's web. There was no mistaking these for anything but government buildings. They were too ugly to be anything else.
You stashed your arsenal in a government complex?
Under the complex? We saw the aliens knocking buildings down and thought it might be safer underground.
As we drove down the ramp leading underground, I checked back with Tomer and Hollingsworth.
We've found Harrington's beacon in the mountains where the aliens dug their mines.
Having seen the enormous entrance carved into the granite face of the cliffs and read the meters showing the toxicity level of the air, Doctorow became as cooperative as a newly minted cadet. When I put him on the line with O'Doul, he gave the order to mobilize the militia. When Hollingsworth's transport touched down, the militia sent trucks out to the airfield to bring him and the rest of my men into town. We drove down one level and parked outside a fenced enclosure. Looking through the chain link, I saw that Doctorow had indeed stockpiled enough weapons to start a galactic war. 12 armed guards stood inside the fence. When they saw O'Doul approach, they unlocked the gate. The armory had stacks of combat armor, more likely salvage than surplus. A fleet of tanks sat in one corner of the garage. They had both gas-spewing Rumsfelds and powerful LGs. Taking a cursory look around, I saw rocket launchers, grenade launchers, rifles, pistols, cannons, landmines, and robot defense units called trackers.
We're going to need particle beam cannons and handheld rocket launchers.
We have enough rockets to send your men out with 1,000 launchers each.
And all of yours, too? I'm going to need men and vehicles.
I'm not sending my men out there.
Dr. O told you to give me whatever support I need. I need vehicles, I need drivers, and I need men to fight on the line.
O'Doul did not like it, and I got the feeling he did not like me. But he knew I was right. He ordered his men to load trucks with particle beam cannons and handheld rocket launchers, and the men went to work. Hollingsworth arrived a few minutes later.
Man, you have enough shit here to overthrow an empire.
The underground garage armory had 7 levels, but at this point in the mission, the back of the 3rd level was what interested me. The rear wall of the 3rd level opened to an underground train station. There were no lights in the station, just a platform that disappeared into utter darkness.
Welcome to the blackest spot on Terrano.
Where does it go?
It's the Norristown subway system. Where do you think it goes? Hit the lights!
A string of bulbs lit up along the ceiling. Instead of illuminating the tunnel, they produced a series of dim bubbles that vanished in the distance. I put on my helmet and stepped through the opening. Even with night-for-day lenses, I could not see very far. I saw the plasticized world around me clearly enough, 20-foot-wide platforms on either side of the tunnel, 6 magnetic tracks laid out like stripes that rolled out as far as the eye could see, and dead monitors which had not displayed train schedules for years. Without juice running through them, the magnetic tracks were simply 4-foot-deep grooves. I removed my helmet.
You're going to use these tunnels to rig your charges?
Unless you have a better idea.
How solid are the tunnels? Are you going to be able to get to the zone?
We've mapped every inch of these speckers, Harris. I know my way around these bitches better than the guys who ran the trains. You just deliver the aliens to the right place at the right time, and I'll cream their asses.
How are we planning to get the bombs in place? There's no way in the world that these guys are going to power a big system like this with a couple of emergency generators.
You let me worry about that. The bombs are my problem. The aliens are yours.
Begging your pardon, sir, the bombs are my problem, too. My orders are to coordinate efforts between your militia and our Marines. I'm staying with you.
Spec? What the spec?
O'Doul, Hollingsworth, and a small army of drivers would shuttle the charges to the target area on the west side of town. Their job was to set the trap. My job was to kick the hornet's nest. I was taking 73 of my 148 remaining Marines, along with 200 men from the local militia, to meet the Avatari. All we had to do was lead the specking aliens into O'Doul's blast zone, then get the hell out of there before the bombs went off. We would definitely take casualties on this one. I had my men stock up on rocket launchers and grenades. If we were forced into a close-range fight, we would use particle beam weapons. That would be the last resort.
What weapons do you think the driver should take?
All they will need are body bags and jackals.
Then we loaded up and left the armory. After we drove west through town, I looked back at my convoy. We had 35 jeeps and 36 jackals, all borrowed from the armory and piloted by militiamen. Those jackals were our best bet. They had rocket arrays set up on their front fenders, machine guns with armor-piercing bullets in their rear turrets, and hundreds of horses under their hoods. We headed south, then west across Norristown. Using the Geiger counter in my visor, I took radiation readings and found more than a few hotspots. The first Norristown defenders must have resorted to nuclear-tipped ordnance as the war wound down. After leaving the downtown area, we entered a war-torn suburb in which the occasional tree or house or chapel stood as a reminder of how life should have been. My men traveled in jeeps. The militia rode in jackals. Jeeps were smaller and a lot more vulnerable, but you could hop in and out of them as fast as you liked. With their armored walls, jackals were not so easy to enter. I rode in the jackal, but it was only as a show of confidence. The guy doing the driving was a high-ranking member of the Norristown militia. O'Doul had designated him Jackal Squad Leader. I could see why. The son of a bitch showed no fear at all. The Jackal Leader flipped some switches on his dash.
I have the aliens on radar.
He swung the screen over so I could have a look. The Avatari were still a couple of miles ahead of us. Their ranks showed up as a solid white block against the glowing green background of the screen. Do you know that part of town?
I used to live there.
Had a nice house with a swing set in the back. They had good schools in this part of town.
I bet the schools aren't much of a selling point anymore.
But the house prices have dropped.
Know any place between us and them that might give us a high ground advantage?
He slowed the Jackal and pulled the radar screen over for a closer look.
There's Hyde Park. It's not exactly mountainous, but the bluffs might work out.
Let's go.
It took about 3 minutes to find Hyde Park, a long terraced pasture with slopes overlooking the western edge of Norristown. The charred remains of a two-story community center stood in the middle of the park like a large chapel overlooking a cemetery. The jeeps led the way, skidding to a stop at the edge of a ridge so my Marines could climb out. The Jackal leader pulled up near my men and stopped.
Thanks for the ride.
From here on out, I would ride in a jeep. I took my spot on the hill, pulled out my first rocket launcher, and prepared for the battle. The iron gray-colored horde appeared in the ruins below us. They were far away, small and indistinct.
The objective at this spot is not, I repeat, not to kill aliens. I'm not handing out medals for kills. Got it? Fire off a rocket and back away. The name of the game here is catching their attention, not holding on to real estate. Anybody who falls behind gets left behind. So do us all a favor and save the heroics.
As I finished my piece, a trio of Jackals rushed in. They sped across the grassy shelf like a formation of fighter jets, speeding over the battered landscape, firing shots, then rushing away. The militia made its first strafing run, while the aliens were still 3/4 of a mile away. The Jackals made their run, then sped to safety. The aliens might have fired after them, but two more formations rocketed onto the ridge from different directions, fired, and retreated. Looking over the battlefield, I decided that the Avatari had not come with their standard 50,000 troops, maybe not even a quarter of that number. Dr. Rowe's militia had done its job. I contacted the Jackal leader.
Pull your men back!
I did not have to tell him twice. The Avatari continued toward us.
Two shots, then make for the jeep.
Down below us, the Avatari continued their march, slow moving, unflinching, unafraid. They marched toward us.
Steady.
Using the equipment in my helmet, I measured the distance between us and the enemy. 600 feet. In another kind of fight, this would have been the moment to fire or to retreat. We could not hit them with HURL rockets at that range. They could hit us, though. A few of them fired in our direction, the bolts flying wild into the sky.
Get down!
Perched on my knees, I measured the range again. The aliens were 575 feet away. An Avatari bolt struck a Marine a few feet to my right. To this point, not a one of my Marines had fired a shot. They waited for the order to shoot. The Avatari was 480 feet away.
Return fire! Two shots and retreat! Two shots and withdraw!
I pulled a handheld rocket, aimed, and fired at the first phalanx of aliens as it reached the bottom of the slope. The Avatari spotted me and returned fire. I fell back as dozens of bolts came soaring toward me.
Head for the jeep!
Three stray bolts shot up through the dirt near my feet. More flew through the air above me. Looking up and down the slope, I saw that I had lost 11 men in all.
Fall back!
I pulled out a second rocket launcher, sprang to my feet, and fired. I turned and sprinted to the jeeps, no more than 20 feet behind the last of my men. It was early in the fight, but we'd already lost 11 men and one Jackal, a bad omen.
Want me to risk a drive-by? Hit them when they reach the top of the hill. One pass and get the hell out. Don't push your luck. You saw what happened.
Pushing your luck? You mean like staying to fire a second rocket after telling your men to retreat?
Get specced. You coming, Captain?
This came from the Marine driving the last jeep.
Yeah, on my way.
I took one last look back in time to see a lone Jackal slice its way across the hill. The gunner swayed back and forth, and the muzzle of his machine gun flashed nonstop. I sprinted to the jeep and jumped in. We easily outpaced the aliens.
How are you doing with the explosives, Hollingsworth?
Well, the duel's a prick.
Is that opinion professional or personal?
Personal. My professional opinion is that the bastard knows his way around a charge.
How long before the area is ready for visitors?
He's got several teams working. The team I'm with is just putting on the finishing touches. We're about to evacuate the area. I'd hate to be around when this place goes up, not with all the shit they have wired. These boys aren't taking any chances. How's it going on the front?
Peachy, Sergeant. Just peachy.
The target zone was 10 miles southeast of us. We could stick to a fairly clean road if we veered north, but that would have taken us in the wrong direction. The area around us was little more than dunes of rubble and the burned-out skeletons of small buildings. It looked like a fire had swept through. I saw nothing that would give us a strategic advantage, so I called in a jackal strike.
Make it look like you mean it.
Like I mean it?
Make it look like you came to fight, not to lead them into a trap.
We'll take casualties.
Understood.
When I looked back, I saw groups of jackals heading toward the Avatari from two different directions. More waves might have moved in from other directions as well. I had hoped for hills, or at least a stretch of buildings,